Falcon, Stumpy, and Wildcat entered the post from the rear at the same time the Snake Riders were coming in the front door. They reached the steps of the saloon at the same time. For a few seconds, it looked as though trouble would start right there while they were all jammed up, neither side willing to give an inch to clear the steps. The men stood and glared at one another for half a minute.
Oh, after you boys, please.
Oh, I'll be damned. You go first.
Well, I want a beer. I'll go first.
Stumpy shoved his way through the men, and a few Snake Riders followed. Then Falcon and Wildcat, followed by the rest of the snake bunch and the post owner, who looked worried. Falcon, Stumpy, and Wildcat ordered beer. The snake bunch ordered whiskey, then took their bottles and shot glasses to the tables and sat down. Stumpy and Wildcat positioned themselves at opposite ends of the plank bar. That left Falcon and Lars standing near the center of the bar. Falcon sipped his beer and ignored the young man. Falcon figured it would take at least a couple of shots of who hit John for Lars to get his courage worked up. Several minutes ticked by, with no one saying a word. The snake men glared at Stumpy and Wildcat.
That's disgusting. Why don't you go outside and sit with the hogs?
If you don't like it in here, Lars, you can always leave.
The Snake Riders seated at the tables were edgy. They didn't like this situation. They were experienced gun hands and knew if trouble started inside the saloon, neither side would emerge victorious. The two older men at the ends of the long bar had the better positions, for they were standing. While they would surely go down, before they did, they would put a lot of lead into the men seated. The Snake Riders had seen right off that the two older men were each wearing two guns, one in leather, the other tucked down behind their gun belts. The Snake Riders also knew how dangerous these older men were, for they were the last of a breed known as mountain men, and there was no backup in them.
I guess you think these old men belching and carrying on in public is funny.
It doesn't bother me, sonny boy.
Well, it bothers me.
I suppose you just might be a little bit more delicate than the rest of us. Your sense of propriety is much more easily bruised.
Now you just wait a damn minute here!
Tell me, you shot any dogs belonging to little boys lately?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're a liar.
Falcon cut his eyes. Stumpy had left the room, and he wondered why.
No man calls me a liar!
I just did, sonny boy. You killed Jimmy Bailey's little dog for no reason. And I'll tell you what you're gonna do about it.
What I'm gonna do?
That's right. What you're gonna do. You're gonna find Jimmy a puppy and bring it over to him and deliver it personally. That's what you're gonna do.
When hell freezes over!
Stumpy walked back into the saloon carrying one of the sawed-off shotguns. He took his position at the bar and broke open the greener, loading up both barrels and snapping it closed. Then he smiled at the Snake Riders. A sawed-off shotgun at this range could kill or seriously wound half a dozen men. Young Lars was on his own for this go-round. Lars looked at the smiling Stumpy and the shotgun and turned a little green around the mouth, realizing that any move his men might make on his behalf could well result in their death.
Don't you think that puppy would be a nice gesture on your part?
You go straight to hell, mister.
Falcon took off his gun belt, laying it on the bar.
Now then, you spoiled brat. Either tuck your tail between your legs and ride out of here, or stand up on your hind legs and fight.
Lars knew he had to fight. He had absolutely no choice in the matter. If he didn't, no matter how much his father paid the men and told them to take orders from his son, they'd never follow him. They'd lose all respect. Now, Lars was no coward. He'd had his share of rough-and-tumble fistfights, and he was no small man. He'd worked hard all his life, and his shoulders and arms were packed with muscle. He slowly took off his gun belt and laid the rig on the bar. He was conscious of the eyes of all his men were on him. He watched as Falcon pulled on a pair of thin black riding gloves he'd taken from a hip pocket of his jeans. Lars wondered about that. He was not yet experienced enough to know that a thin leather covering on the fists both protected the hands and enabled a person to hit harder. Lars suddenly lunged at Falcon. Falcon sidestepped and gave the younger man a hard shot to the belly. Falcon stepped back and let him catch his breath. Lars lunged at him again. Blows stopped Lars cold. He shook his head to clear the lights out of his vision and stood for a moment, glaring at Falcon.
You know where you can find a cute little puppy for Jimmy?
Falcon let the younger man's blows fall on his shoulders, doing no real damage, although Lars thought he was inflicting a good deal of abuse. Falcon abruptly shoved the man away and popped him on the nose, bringing a thin flow of blood. Lars backed away and wiped his nose with the back of his hand. He stared down at the blood for a second. He seemed outraged at the sight of his own blood. He wiped his nose again and lifted his fists, finally getting some smarts about fighting the man who stood in front of him smiling. Falcon stepped back, allowing the younger man to catch his breath. Lars had to breathe through his mouth because of his damaged beak. Lars was game. Falcon had to concede that. He plowed in, his eyes wild with fury and his fists pumping in windmills. Falcon lowered his fists and pulled off his gloves, tucking them in his back pocket. He stepped to the bar and finished his beer, then signaled the post owner for a refill. None of the snake riders made a move except to lift their shot glasses. Falcon was halfway through his beer before Lars tried to stand up on wobbly legs and rubber knees. He didn't make it. He slumped back down until he could wheel his head to cease its spinning.
I expect you to personally bring Jimmy a puppy. All bathed and prettied up. A nice friendly little dog. You hear me, Lars? I'll take that as a yes. You boys be sure to remind Lars and his father about the puppy. I wouldn't want a little boy to be disappointed. Understood?
Several of the snake hands nodded their heads.
Well, that's fine. Glad we all got this straightened out. Right, Lars?
Falcon rubbed his jaw. Lars could hit, and hit hard, no doubt about it. He just didn't know how to fight. Falcon doubted the young man would live long enough to learn.
Let's ride, boys. We got a ways to go. I'll see you in a few days, Lars, when you bring that little pooch to Jimmy.
You really think Lars will bring Jimmy a puppy?
Kip nodded his head in the fast-fading light of the day.
Yes, I do, John. The son got his butt kicked over this puppy. It's a matter of honor to the Gilman name now. Miles just might even come along with the son.
Be a sight to see.
He said he might come along.
Well, if he does, it'll be for more than one reason.
To check out the place, yeah, I know it.
Maybe he'll bring the kid with him, that silver dollar kid. It'd be like him to do that. He always did like to show off his pretties.
Maybe Miles thinks just the sight of the kid will scare us all off.
That just might have done it before Val Max showed up. Or whatever his name is.
Cookie thinks he knows who Val Max really is. He just can't pull the name up. He swears he's seen him before. I got me an idea. But it's so far-fetched, it's unreasonable.
Who do you think he is?
I think Val Mack is really Falcon McAllister.
Jamie McAllister's boy?
I seen the boy about 15 years ago down in Colorado. Just the one time it was. He's older now, heavier by a few pounds. But he's still the spitting image of his pa.
McAllister? That's him, all right. Now that you've dug up the name, it fits. I seen him years back when I was helping push them beeves up from the south. That boy was dressed in all buckskins and looked about wild and untamed as them Cheyenne he was traveling with.
Well, I'll be damned. Falcon McAllister working for me. Lord, the McAllisters is the richest family in the whole West. They're worth millions, way I hear it.
For a fact, John. Their grandpa found all sorts of gold and silver and marked the locations. Gave it all to Falcon's pa. Jamie used some of the money to buy land, thousands of acres. He bought McAllister's Valley. That piece of land stretches for 50, 60 miles. Runs north and south, I believe. It's about 20 or 30 miles wide. McAllister's own it all, except what they sold to friends. Then he bought the land east and west of the valley and bought mines all over the west. He done it all on the sly, without nobody excepting his wife knowing anything about it. He hired lawyers and bankers in big cities to invest his money wisely, and they done it too. He bought stock in railroads and factories and inventions that nobody thought would prove out.
And Falcon, so the story goes, was always the wild one, sort of like his pa. Always wanting to see new country and always taking off to travel alone. He's finally settled down and married him some sort of engine princess, and they had several kids. Now, she was killed a couple years back, and Falcon hit the high lonesome, tracking down them men who killed his wife.
That's the story, all right.
But I heard somebody saying Falcon was wanted for killing two lawmen over in Utah. All right, now the pieces of the puzzle is coming together. Those lawmen was Noonans. Brothers of Nance Noonan, wasn't they? A federal marshal and a local sheriff, way I heard it.
That's the way I heard it.
And Falcon McAllister's working right here on the Rocking Horse Range. Hard to believe.
You know, all these old mountain men know who he is. They was all friends of Falcon's pa. That's why they all come a-running when Falcon sent out the word for help.
Do we let on that we know?
We might as well. One of us is sure to let it slip accidental. I sure would like to be there when Miles hears the news.
Within 48 hours, the news had spread all over that part of Wyoming. Falcon McAllister was working for the Rocking Horse spread, and it was he who'd bought all those sections of land and had all that money deposited in the local bank. Miles Gilman sat in his darkened study and watched the evening shadows creep slowly around the room. He'd already sent a wire about Falcon to the local deputy federal marshal's office down at the territorial capital, and he'd received the bad news. The warrant had been lifted on Falcon. He was free as an eagle.
Falcon McAllister. Of all the people in the West to show up and take sides with John Bailey, it would have to be him. Damn!
Miles lifted the glass of whiskey. He started to sip, then grimaced and placed the glass back on the side table. Outside, several of the hands were playing with the little puppy he'd gotten for his son to take over to the Rocking Horse. Whenever Lars was able to get out of bed, that is. Falcon had given him one hell of a beating. Maybe tomorrow they would ride over. 72 hours was long enough for Lars to lollygag about in bed, getting waited on hand and foot by his sister. Miles stood up and walked over to the window, watching for a moment as the hands played with the dog. It was a cute puppy. Miles had always liked dogs. He shook his head, turned away from the window. Matters were going sour. He could feel it in his guts. Turning back was impossible. Miles knew that for a certainty. Everything was in motion and rolling. It couldn't be stopped. This was one train that was going to go straight to the end of the track. And anyone who tried to stop it was going to get run over. And that was that. And if that person's name happened to be Falcon McAllister, that was too goddamn bad. Nance was bringing a number of men up with him. My God, the man had 7 brothers and about 15 cousins alone. Probably 40 hands, most of them drawing fighting wages. Add that number to Miles' crew and Rod Stegman's hands. God, it was an army. Miles sat down and picked up his glass of whiskey, took a sip. He felt better after thinking it through. He felt a few hunger pangs touch his stomach and wondered if the cook had any supper left. Miles finished his drink and walked to the kitchen. Lars was sitting up in the den, Terry sitting beside him. Boy looked like a tree full of owls, both eyes discolored, lips still swollen some, one ear all puffed up. Miles wondered if his son had landed even one blow on Falcon. Probably not.
We're gonna take that puppy over to the Rocking Horse in the morning. Be ready to go at dawn.
I'm going too.
Miles nodded his head, knowing it would be pointless to argue with the girl.
Fine. We'll make it a family affair. Where are your brothers?
Out with the herds.
Miles's other sons didn't stay at the ranch much, preferring the line shacks to the big house. Miles didn't understand that, but he didn't dwell much on it. They were all growed up men and could do as they damn well pleased, and they usually did. Miles fixed a plate of food and sat at the table in the kitchen and ate. He finished and walked back into the den. Lars's sister had certainly done her part to spoil the boy rotten. She needled and poked fun at him, but she loved him 100% nonetheless.
Daddy?
Yes, darling girl?
How come we don't just ride up into old man Bailey's yard tomorrow and just shoot all them people right down dead when they aren't expecting it? That way we could just have done with it.
There was no doubt that Terry was as pretty as any sunset that God had ever graced the earth with. Unfortunately, while he blessed Terry with uncommon good looks, he shorted her on smarts. Terry could sometimes be as dumb as a post without even trying.
Well, darling, you see, there's going to be 6 or 8 rifles on us the whole time we're at John Spread. We try anything funny and we're dead, baby.
Oh, well, I guess John doesn't trust any of us much, does he?
No, darling, he don't.
Well, that explains that, I guess.
Does it? Good. I think I need another drink.
Miles loved his only daughter, but he also wished some nice young man would come right along and marry her and take her away. Because sometimes she nearabouts drove him slap nuts.
Brought a pup for you, boy.
He says it. Let Laura say it.
Here's your dog, boy.
Thanks, mister.
Miles?
John, it's been a while.
Lars wasn't looking at anyone. He sat his saddle and kept his eyes downcast. But Terry, she was staring at Falcon, as was the lone hand with him. A young man with silver dollars on his hat, vest, and gun belt.
I heard of you, Falcon McAllister. I reckon you heard of me.
Can't say I have, boy.
Been around quite a bit, you know.
I didn't know that, but I'm sure glad to hear it. A young man ought to get around and see the country. It helps to broaden his horizons.
Big Bob Marsh and the other mountain men were out of sight, in the barn, bunkhouse, and house, all armed with rifles and ready to bang in case of trouble. Their absence did not escape the eyes of Miles Gilman.
John, sell out to me and move away. I'll give you a fair price.
Miles, do you know how many years we've been out here?
Long time, John, that's for sure.
26 years, Miles. This is home. I've buried both kin and hands over yonder on the hill, and that's where I plan to be buried when it comes my time. I'm not selling out to you or anyone.
Then I guess we got nothing else to talk about, John. The name McAllister don't mean a whole lot up here, mister.
Then I'll have to see to it that I leave some sort of lasting impression on the good people of this part of the country, won't I?
Terry was still staring at Falcon. Handsome and rich to boot. She was definitely interested.
What's the puppy's name? Dog's gotta have a name.
We didn't name it, John. Thought we'd leave that up to the boy.
The silver dollar kid continued to stare at Falcon, as did Terry.
Well, how's Martha, John?
She's well, Miles. We were speaking of you just the other day. The times we had, before the troubles.
Before the troubles, John? Well, we've been fighting Injuns, outlaws, bad weather, low prices, squatters. Seems like trouble's all we've known. But I reckon I know what you mean. Well, those days are gone, John. They ain't never gonna come again. And don't do no good to think about them.
If that's the way you feel about it, I reckon not.
Lars raised his battered face to Falcon.
None will kill you, McAllister. I'm telling you that right now.
You gonna do it facing me, boy, or backshoot me?
No Gilman ever backshot no man.
Just asking.
I'll call you out, McAllister. Count on it.
If you feel it has to be that way.
No man does to me what you done and gets away with it.
You could have walked away from it.
You know better. That ain't the way it's done out here. But I ain't my son, McAllister. If me and you ever tie up, the outcome will be different.
I doubt it. But no one needs to tie up with anybody. There's land plenty here for all. You and John Bailey came in here with a few head each of cattle and built a home. Helped settle this land. Probably did settle this part of the territory all by yourselves. Then one of you got greedy and wanted what the other had. It can stop right here and now and...
No, by God, it can't! It's gone too far for that, and John knows it. I gotta have grass and water for my cattle, and for my partner's cattle, and by God, I'm gonna get it.
Martha and Angie stepped out of the house and began walking toward the gathering by the corral. Both of them carried rifles.
Oh, Martha, Since when do you need a rifle to face me?
Since your riders began paying us visits at night, Miles, and your son there leading them.
Miles' mouth clamped shut. He couldn't deny the charge with any conviction. But he had not authorized the raid, and he'd almost hit Lars when he'd heard of it. But now, sitting in his saddle, he recalled his words of only a few days back to start killing of Rocking Horse hands and either drive the rancher and his wife and family off their ranch or bury them.
Mister, did your daddy really fight at the Alamo?
Yes, he did.
My, my, I haven't seen you in a long time, Angie. I believe you were wearing that same dress last time I saw you.
Falcon immediately backed up, putting some distance between him and the two young women. Both John and Martha had told him there had never been any love lost between Terry and Angie, beginning when they were little girls.
Oh, I probably was. This is a ranch where everybody works, Terry. I don't sit around on my butt and stuff my face with imported chocolates the way some do.
Are you talking about me, Angie?
I'm sure standing right here talking to you, aren't I?
Terry was off her horse in a flash and marching up to Angie.
Now girls!
You take back what you just said about me!
Go jump in the creek!
Why, you!
Terry reared back and took a wild plunge at Angie. She missed and fell off balance. Angie seized that opportunity to slap her across the face. The Silver Dollar Kid's horse reared up and the kid hit the ground. Terry grabbed Angie and tried to throw her to the ground, but Angie was too strong. She broke free and popped Terry on the side of the face.
Whoa, damn it!
Miles grabbed for the saddle horn, missed, and went sailing.
Whoa! Damnation!
Terry managed to land one punch on Angie's cheek, but it was a glancing blow and did little except further enrage the woman. Angie connected solidly with Terry's jaw and knocked her to the ground. Angie straddled Terry and began pounding her face.
My God, I'll not tolerate it!
Gilman jumped to his boots and ran to his daughter's assistance. Lars had sat a saddle for a moment, just looking at the melee. Then he slowly turned his horse and rode off without a change of expression. Miles grabbed Angie's shoulders and tried to pull her away from his daughter.
John, do something!
John put a hard hand on Miles' shoulder and spun him around.
All right, by God. I should have done this a long time ago.
Then get up and do it, you son of a bitch.
John was about 10 years older than Miles, but unlike Miles, John had never stopped doing hard, brutal work every day of his life. He was in excellent physical shape, while Miles had grown soft. Falcon had stepped away from the fight, keeping an eye on the Silver Dollar Kid. The mountain men left their hiding places to stand and stare in disbelief at the goings-on.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Miles was puffing and puffing while John appeared to be enjoying himself. He was certainly getting the better of the younger man. Lars had completely disappeared from sight, riding slowly back to the road that would either take him to town or to the Snake Ranch. He hadn't looked around once during his departure.
By God, I'll teach you a lesson.
Well, you're doing a piss-poor job of it.
Miles bored in, swinging both fists and hitting nothing but air. John sidestepped Miles' charge and stuck out a boot, tripping the man and sending him sprawling to the ground. Miles came up like an angry grizzly. He charged at John and grabbed the man in a bear hug, each of them going hard to the ground. Angie and Terry were standing toe-to-toe, slugging it out. Martha had walked over to stand beside Falcon with a disgusted look on her face.
This is positively disgraceful.
That's one word for it.
Angie and Terry both stepped in a puddle of water and lost their balance, both of them hitting the ground. Terry crawled to her feet and Falcon pointed a finger at her.
It's over, lady. Now settle down.
Falcon seized that moment to grab Angie by the neck of her dress and haul her away, physically slinging her in the direction of her mother. Terry's nose was bleeding, one lip was puffy, and her hair was all a mess. But she was game. Terry charged it. She slammed into the man, knocking him to one side.
Hey, whoa!
Falcon tripped and went sprawling to the ground. Terry stepped all over him in her wild charge to get to Angie, and the two women went at it again.
Whore, you slut!
Well, to hell with it.
John and Miles had lost their six-shooters. Angie had propped her rifle up against the corral. Terry's pistol was lying in a big pile of horse crap. There was no danger of anyone starting any gunplay anyway. Dan Carson had followed Lars when he rode off. He returned.
Big Bob, Lars is gone, heading into town. We'll not see him again today. What's happening here?
Craziness. I reckon the best thing we could do is just let them fight until they're plumb wore out.
Falcon had crawled into the corral, putting the bars between him and the combatants. Martha walked back into the house. Four participants in the free-for-all were still at it, rapidly running out of steam. The Silver Dollar Kid noticed the six mountain men, all armed with rifles, all looking at him. Kid smiled rather weakly, held out his hands wide, signaling that he wanted no trouble at this time. Mustang walked over and gathered up the kid's guns, stuffing them into his saddlebags and buckling the flap securely. John gave Miles a solid shot to the jaw, and Miles went down in a heap. Not quite out, but close. Terry and Angie were also running out of steam. But of the two, Terry had fared the worst. One eye was closing, her nose was bleeding, and her mouth was all puffed. Angie gave her one more good pop to the jaw, and the woman went down on her butt. This time, she stayed there.
Well, that's it.
Falcon stepped out of the corral and motioned for the others to join in. Together, Falcon and Big Bob and the others managed to get Terry and Miles on their boots and get between the Baileys and the Gilmans and keep them separated.
Get them on their horses and get them out of here.
Ah! I'll kill you, you bitch!
You've not heard the last from me, John.
Anytime you want to really settle this, Miles, just let me know and we'll stand up and face each other with guns. Now get off my property and don't ever come back. I might just decide to shoot you on sight.
Gilman managed to get into the saddle. Puma had shucked all the cartridges out of his pistol and stuck it back into Miles' holster. Stumpy had done the same with Terry's pistol. The kid had gotten into the saddle and was waiting patiently. Angie came to her father's side and put an arm around his waist. She was a mess, but not near the mess she'd left Terry. Father and daughter stood and watched Miles, Terry, and the Silver Dollar Kid ride off. John had a lump on one side of his jaw and a busted lip, but other than that, he was unhurt.
The fat's in the fire now, folks. From now on, it'll be shooting, not fists.
Yeah, you're probably right about that, Kip. But God damn, that was fun.
John, Angie, you get yourselves in here and let me clean you up. And I mean right now. Kip, you get down to the creek and see about Jimmy.
Yes, ma'am.
Kip vacated the scene promptly.
It's gonna get dirty from now on, Falcon. Real low down dirty.
It had to come, boys. We all knew that.
Yeah, sooner we get done here, the sooner I can get back home and see my Jenny.
During the next week, Falcon visited each of the farmers and small ranchers in the area, warning them that tensions were rising. He brought them spare weapons and ammunition, made certain each person of age knew how to use them. Falcon felt sure that every family would stand and fight to the last person. He reported as much to John Bailey.
Oh, they'll fight, and they'll put up one hell of a fight. The ranchers have been here, hell, some as long as me. They're all combat veterans from the war between states. A couple of them officers. They're all good people.
John, I have to ask this. Do you want to take the fight to Miles and the others?
I should. I know I should, but I just can't do it, Falcon. It just isn't in me.
I know, John. It's got to be all of them, I understand.
They've got to start it, Falcon.
And you don't think they have already?
That's my decision. Can you and the other men live with it?
Oh, we can live with it, John. Problem is, can you and your family live with it? And do you have the right to speak for all the others?
I've spoken with my family. We all agree that Miles has got to make the first move. After that, I guess anything goes.
Then we'll wait for him to open the dance. But I warn you, when it hits, rules go right out the window. I don't fight by rules, and neither do any of the boys. It's gonna get dirty.
The first bunch of Stegman and Noonan's hands rode in. Stumpy was posted up on a ridge and was watching them through field glasses as they rode across the grasslands. He reported back to Falcon.
They're hired guns, all right. I recognized a couple of them. They're experienced shooters. Where are they out of, you reckon? Some was sitting Texas rigs. I seen one that I know is out of New Mexico, and another that's made quite a name for himself out of Utah. The rest, from all over.
How many in this first bunch?
I counted 10.
Probably more than that, unless he took off his boots and used his toes to count with.
Falcon stepped outside. Kip was leaning against a support beam on the porch.
Trouble?
It's gathering for a fact. Stumpy spied 10 men approaching. They're not amateurs.
They can gather until hell freezes over. But until they actually do something, John isn't going to strike. The herds won't be far behind, will they?
Oh, probably no more than 2-3 weeks would be my guess.
I'll tell John.
Kip walked to the main house, leaving Falcon alone by the corral with his thoughts. Falcon knew there were others he could call in to assist in this fight, but he also knew that numbers alone would not win it for John and the others. Dan Carson walked out to join him. The older man shaped himself a cigarette and handed Falcon the makings.
You know the easy way to do it, don't you?
Oh, sure. But do you think John would go along with that?
He might not have a choice in the matter.
Kill Noonan, Stegman, and Gilman? He'll never go along with it, Dan. Put it out of your mind.
It was just a thought. It's what Jamie would have done.
Oh, I know that. Paul wouldn't hesitate for a minute. But this ain't our show. We're just the soldiers in this.
Son, the soldiers always have the solution. The men who do the actual fighting always know the simple way. It's the generals and the politicians that drag it out.
One by one, the others joined him at the corral, standing and smoking in silence. Finally, Cookie made up the last of the non-family group. Kip was considered part of the Bailey family.
John is one of the most decent men any of you will ever run up on. He's honorable clear through. He still thinks there's hope for Miles.
Well, he's wrong. Miles Gilman is power hungry. I can't speak for his other kids, but Terry and Lars is just like him. Terry's lazy and worthless, and Lars, he's just plumb crazy in the head. That whooping you gave him, Falcon, that shoved him right over the edge.
It wouldn't have taken no big push, boy. He was set to step over the line.
Then the daughter ain't no different. That girl's not right in the head.
She's just mean, that's all. She's always been that way. She's just plain, low-down, dirty mean.
She really is.
She's just no good. She done some dastardly things.
Well, I'll be damned. Pretty thing, though.
Miss Angie damn sure wound her clock for low, didn't she?
We'd better start posting guards. I hate to do it, but I think it's a smart thing to do.
I was gonna suggest that. Miles ain't never gonna forget that whooping John Bailey hung on him.
And him and that boy of his'n both meant what they said about killing you and John, Falcon.
Well, there are threats, and then there are threats. Both father and son meant theirs. And trouble could come any time, including tonight.
Falcon had just gone on his watch, midnight till 2, when he detected the slightest movement from the direction of the creek. There was no cattle grazing in that area, so he waited, watching. There was another movement, all some 20 or 30 feet from the first one. Falcon knelt down, picked up a pebble from the ground, and tossed it against the side of the bunkhouse. That would be all the signal the mountain men would need. Within seconds, the front door of the bunkhouse was cracked open a few inches.
Hoo! Hoo!
The door closed quickly, the mountain men picking up on one of the Cheyenne signals for danger. But there was no way Falcon could signal those in the main house. They would have to come up alert and ready at the sound of the first shot. Falcon had told John about his plans to mount a guard, and the rancher agreed it was the prudent thing to do, especially after hearing Stumpy tell of the bunch of hired guns he'd seen riding in. Out of the corner of his eye, Falcon saw the front door to the bunkhouse open, and three men dart out a few seconds apart, rifles in their hands. One headed for the barn, another took up position behind the wood pile, and the third bellied down behind the rocks of an old well off to the far side of the bunkhouse. This time, the signal was coming from the main house. John was up, and he'd seen what was going on. The old Indian fighter had been sleeping lightly. He would have his family up and adults ready at rifle slits, Jimmy safe behind cover.
Come on, boys. Hit us with your midnight raid. We're ready.
Falcon looked carefully all around, moving his head slowly, ears straining to pick up the smallest of sounds. The hired guns had managed to surround the spread before one moved at the wrong time, and Falcon detected the movement. Falcon heard Hell snicker softly in his stall. He wouldn't make a sound if it was someone familiar, so that meant a mercenary had made his way into the barn. The mountain man waiting in the barn would not give away his position until the first shot was fired outside, or unless the gun hand spotted him. Falcon waited for the hired guns to make the first move. He hoped John and his family were ready.
Go! We're found out! Burn the place down!
When the torches the gun hands carried were ignited, Falcon and his men opened up. The men carrying the torches went down almost immediately, mortally wounded. The torches began burning themselves out harmlessly on the ground.
It's an ambush!
Many of them didn't make it, but the raking gunfire of the ranch defenders was merciless. The firefight was over in a few minutes, the survivors making it back to their horses and heading hard for home range, leaving their dead and their badly wounded behind. The defenders left their positions warily, but all the fight was gone from those wounded left behind. Martha and Angie stayed in the main house with Jimmy. John and Kip walked among the dead, dying and wounded.
You know any of them, Kip?
Nope. I never seen any of them before.
Kip held the lantern while John knelt down beside one hard-hit gun hand. The young man had taken two .44 slugs in the belly. He couldn't have been more than 20 years old.
Boy, you got parents somewhere?
Young man nodded his head.
You want me to notify him?
No. I ain't got nothing to say to them, too.
That's mighty hard of you, son.
They threw me out. Hell with them.
John left him and walked over to another gun slick and knelt down.
I got money in my pocket and my ma's name and town written down on a piece of paper. You see she gets the money?
I'll see to it. You have my word.
Kind of you.
John patted the man's pockets until he found his wallet. There were $50 in the worn leather purse and a piece of paper. He stood up and shook his head.
$50? The man died for $50.
Nobody forced him to sign on with Gilman.
Falcon.
Right here, John.
Are there any wounded who can drive a wagon?
Oh, yeah. One here with just a crease on his head. He's fine otherwise.
Have the boys hitch up a team, please. We'll put the dead and the wounded in the wagon and take them to town.
You think they'll be back tonight, Falcon?
Nah, I think they're through for now. Has anybody counted the dead?
Hell, we ain't even found them all yet. Here's another one that's hard-hit and ain't gonna make it.
I don't wanna die.
You should have thought about that before you decided to fight for pay, boy.
You're making light of my dying.
Well, I damn sure wish you'd hurry up and expire, boy. I was having me a dandy dream before all this crap started.
It's gonna be a long night.
Noonan and Stegman arrived the next day, riding far in advance of the herd being pushed up into North Wyoming. They sat in Gilman's study, drinking whiskey and listening to yet another one of the survivors of the abortive raid on the rocking horse tell what had happened.
Get out. I'm sick of hearing all these damn excuses.
Finally, Newman and Stegman were alone with Miles Gilman.
Miles, you were supposed to have all this area clean for us when we arrived. What the hell happened?
Falcon McAllister, that's what happened.
One man is responsible for this holdup? I don't believe it.
I do. The old man, Jamie McAllister, ended up owning an entire county down in Colorado, plus bits of half the damn state. Made friends with all the damn Injuns. None of them would ever bother no one who lived in that damn valley of his. I don't know how he'd done it. I hate that damn Falcon McAllister. I hate all McAllisters.
He's organized and armed all the small ranchers and farmers in this part of the state. He's armed them with weapons taken from the men I hired to run them out.
Where is he getting supplied?
From the old trading post?
Well, hell, man, put the damn trading post out of business. Burn it down, blow it up, kill the bastard who runs it.
Can't do that, Nance. The place is a stage stop. It's also a remount station for the cavalry. We don't want private detectives and the cavalry taking sides with the small ranchers and farmers.
Yeah, you're right about that. Damn! How about the federal marshal for this area?
He won't bother us.
And the county sheriff is out of it?
All the way.
Six old men join up with Falcon McAllister and bring everything to a halt. Incredible.
You know who these old men are, Nance?
No, I don't. What the hell difference does that make?
Miles named them all, and Nance's mouth dropped wide open. Miles had just named some of the most famous mountain men of the West. Army scouts, Indian fighters, explorers, trailblazers, and so much more.
Books and stories have been written about those men. We can't afford to have the Eastern press get wind of this. They'll come swarming in here. But neither can I afford to have this drag on for months. I've got cattle coming in, and they're going to need graze and water. Money is not the answer. McAllister could buy and sell all three of us. And if all the McAllisters was to get involved in this fight, they'd just hire a damn army to come in and wipe us out right down to the last man. If I had any sense, I'd back off and out of here and just look somewhere else. But this is personal, between me and Falcon. And by God, I intend to see it through to the finish.
I've got to stay. I've got no choice in the matter. This is business.
I know, Rod, I know. Don't worry, I'm not going to quit on you.
We've got to give this situation some hard head ruminating. Miles' way's not working. That's plain to see. So we've got to come up with another plan.
Good thinking, Rod. Excellent.
We can outlast them. If you had to, Nance, you could graze your cattle south and west of here until all this was settled.
If it comes to that, yeah. But we've got a few weeks before the herds arrive. We might get lucky between now and then.
Let's just ambush McAllister and have done with it.
As if that hadn't been tried about 24 times. Man's as savvy as his father. Oh, let's have some breakfast. Think on this some. Maybe get some rest. More men will be coming in today and tomorrow. I want the next move we make to end it. I want to see Falcon McAllister dead.
The Noonan clan began arriving and settling in. Families took up residence in the ranch houses that had been vacated by the rightful owners out of fear for their lives. There were 8 Noonan brothers, counting Nance, 6 cousins, a small army of kids ranging from toddlers to grown men in their early 20s. The Noonan clan swelled the population of the county by about 100, and they claimed thousands of acres of land. Each family had 6 to 10 hands, most of them hired guns. Stegman claimed as his own what had been the 3rd largest ranch in the area and moved in his family and a few of his hands. The business people in the town of Gilman were overjoyed at the prospect of new customers. A new cafe had been added, as well as a new saloon and several other businesses. The new saloon was called the Palace. It was anything but. No one seemed to object to its raw and austere interior. The dozen girls that worked at the Palace livened up the joint considerably as soon as the sun went down. They had to wait until dark before making an appearance, for most of the soiled doves were so damn ugly they could have made a living haunting graveyards.
Good God! I'm glad I waited for eating lunch.
In town, Falcon stood with the mountain men on the boardwalk after seeing to their horses. Stumpy grimaced at the sight of the soiled doves lounging under the awning of the Palace.
I'll bet when them gals was born, their mamas didn't know if they was gonna walk or fly.
Be kind, boys. You know what they say about horse having a heart of gold.
I ain't found one yet that did, and I have had a bit of experience with horse.
No, I never would have guessed that, you wildcat. I don't know whether I want to associate with you no more.
A dozen horses came galloping into town. The riders ran it up in front of the Palace.
N/N hands. Seems like a real nice bunch of boys, don't they?
Falcon went into the bank to see about some land that the bank had foreclosed on.
president of the bank, Willard, almost had a heart attack when Falcon strolled in. He forced a smile and greeted Falcon.
The small ranch just west of the Rocking Horse. You just foreclosed on it, and I want to buy it. How much?
Well, that was the Roan place, Mr. McAllister. It's already been picked up, I'm afraid.
All right, Willard. Thanks.
He turned and walked out of the bank, stepping back onto the boardwalk just in time to see Jim Wilson and his family rattle into town in a wagon. The Wilsons had moved into the area just before Falcon had arrived, having inherited a farm from Wilson's older brother who'd just been killed. The farm was a large one, for the elder Wilson had bought a number of sections over the hard months before his death from people who had given up under threat from Gilman. Jim's wife, Peggy, was a tiny thing, but with steel in her backbone and a set to her jaw that told anyone that this was one woman who wouldn't give up. The Wilsons had four kids, two boys and two girls. The boys were 14 and 12, the girls were 10 and 8. Jim was a former captain in some unit of the Tennessee Cavalry, a highly decorated Confederate officer. Since Falcon had suddenly become one of the county's money men, his money had become good all over town, and that was something that not even Gilman could stop. Falcon had also passed the word that the farmers and small ranchers, who had heretofore been prevented from shopping in town, had better be welcomed with open arms in every store. Falcon watched a couple of N/N hands as they stood under the awning in front of the palace and scowled at the Wilsons as they rattled and bounced into town. Then the hired gun stepped back into the saloon.
Be trouble in a few minutes.
He lifted his eyes, looking for Wildcat and Stumpy. They had spread out across the street, left and right at the front of the palace. They were ready for whatever trouble came their way. The boardwalk in front of the palace was soon crowded with N/N hands, all of them with bottles of whiskey in their hands, drinking and getting themselves primed and cocked for trouble. The Wilsons stopped in front of Dean's General Store and got out of the wagon. Falcon moved a block closer to the store, staying in the shadows. So far, he was sure he'd not been spotted by any of the N/N hands. Falcon moved closer to the General Store and watched the Wilsons climb down from the wagon and enter the store. Several N/N hands began walking toward the store, swigging whiskey as they walked. Falcon moved to the end of the street and crossed over. The N/N hands paid no attention to him, just another cowboy crossing the street. Falcon decided it was time to step in before Jim took some sort of action and got himself hurt or killed. There were four N/N hands entering the general store when Falcon stepped up on the boardwalk from the street.
You sure you got the pretty mouth, Miss Piggy? I'm like to wondering if you know how to eat it.
Now that's enough of that kind of talk.
Peg farmer's getting mad, Jess.
Falcon stepped through the open doors and stopped just inside the store. He stood for a moment, allowing his eyes to adjust to the gloom.
What the hell you want, mister?
Oh, maybe some peppermint candy. Yeah, that'd be a nice treat today.
Oh my, the big man wants some peppermint candy. Quick, get him some candy.
Oh, I bet he's a real tough fella, all right. What's your limit, cowboy? Two pieces of peppermint candy? Falcon stepped toward the counter. Peggy had the two girls close to her. The youngest was pale and frightened.
Let him through, boys. Mr. Two Guns has to have some candy.
What the hell you reckon he's got them guns loaded with? Sugar cookies?
Yeah, sugar cookies.
I really wish you boys wouldn't cuss in front of the lady and her children.
Falcon moved closer to a barrel filled with axe handles.
Oh my! We shouldn't cuss in front of the pig farmer's woman and kids, boys. Mr. Peppermint Candy is taking offense at our language. What do you think about that, Pete?
Well, he can take a fistful of peppermint sticks and shove them right up his...
Falcon spun around and jammed one end of the axe handle into the stomach of a double end rider. Just as Jim Wilson jerked an axe handle out of the barrel and slammed it against the back of a third double end gun hand's head.
Son of a bitch!
The fourth end slash end rider grabbed for his pistol just as Falcon swung the axe handle, connecting with the side of the man's head.
You ready for a fight, my friend?
I'm ready, Mr. McAllister, but I'm not armed.
Falcon began jerking the end slash end rider's pistols from leather and tossing them to a startled storekeeper and his wife, both of whom were standing open mouth behind the counter. They caught the six guns, handling them like they were giant bees. Hauling Pete up to his boots, Falcon busted him right in the mouth with a hard fist. Pete went stumbling out the front door and fell off the boardwalk into the street. Jim had jerked up another rider and smacked him on the jaw with a work-hardened fist. The man followed his crony out the front door and into the street.
Oh, no you don't.
Jim was pounding a fist into the face of the fourth gun slick. After a few seconds, Jim jerked the man up bodily and sent him stumbling through the open front door, off the boardwalk, and into the street. Falcon reached down and pulled up the last of the end-slash-end men. He sent him out the front door. He went off the boardwalk and impacted against Pete, who was just getting to his boots. Both of them went sprawling into the dirt of the street.
Put those guns in a sack, Mr. Dane. And put them with the other supplies Mr. and Mrs. Wilson decide to purchase.
Yes, sir, Mr. McAllister. I'll do that.
And anything the Wilsons want, let them have. Put it on my account. Understood?
I certainly do. Anything at all.
The remaining end-slash-end hands were gathering outside the general store, standing over their fallen friends.
What about them?
I'll worry about them. You folks just do your shopping.
One man against six or eight?
I have a couple of boys outside. You helped in here, now let me handle the outside. You and your wife go on shopping. Stay away from the dorm windows.
All right, Mr. McAllister. We'll do as you ask.
Falcon. I told you. It's Falcon.
Jim nodded. Falcon turned and walked outside to stand on the boardwalk, over the end-slash-end hands who were just now trying to get to their hands and feet. End-slash-end riders were beginning to gather around, trying to help their buddies. Stumpy and Wildcat were standing on the street behind them, ready to hook and draw. Falcon detected movement behind him, but he didn't dare take his eyes off the end-slash-end riders. Jim stepped up beside him, to his left, a rifle in his hands.
I'll take that stocky one with the beard.
All right, Jim.
And I'll make sure that tall, skinny one never bothers another woman or child.
Ma'am? I didn't say nothing to you, tall.
Your friends did. Filthy things, and they thought it was funny to say them in front of children.
The Wilson's oldest boy, James, walked out onto the boardwalk carrying a rifle. He stepped up to stand by his father.
I'm not gonna take it no more. I'm proud to be a farmer.
Good for you, son.
The end-slash-end riders suddenly found themselves in a bad situation. Two men behind them, men who by the look of them had been born with the bark on and ready to kill. Four people in front of them.
That's Falcon McAllister. I seen him down in Colorado one time.
Well, that did it. All the fight went right out of the hired hands, at least for a moment. None of them wanted to tangle face to face with Falcon McAllister.
We'll be heading back to the saloon now.
Fine. Me and my men will just stick around while the Wilsons do their shopping. I think it's a real shame when a decent family can't come into town and shop without being accosted. Don't you, buddy?
You and me will meet up another time. But there ain't no women, no kids around.
I'm sure we will, buddy.
And my name ain't Buddy. It's Les.
All right, Les. I'll make it a point to look you up sometime. See you around, Les, old buddy.
Falcon stood on the boardwalk and watched the end-slash-end riders walk back to the palace.
Do I keep those pistols you took from those men, Falcon?
Yeah, and you carry one with you at all times. Plowing, going to the well, slopping the hogs everywhere. Understood?
I understand.
Falcon turned and started back into the store.
Where are you going?
Get me some peppermint candy.
Falcon had him a hunch that once Les knocked back a couple of shots of hooch, he just might come looking for him. If so, it couldn't be helped. Falcon hoped that had not be the case, but if it was, so be it. Falcon had other errands to attend to in town, and he wasn't going to leave because of Les's hurt feelings, or whatever else might be eating at the N/N rider. Falcon bought the Wilson kids each a peppermint stick, then stood in front of the general store, chomping on his own stick of peppermint candy. He glanced down the street toward the palace. Les was standing outside, drinking from a bottle of whiskey, and glaring down Falcon's way.
Damn.
He looked across the street from the store. Stumpy and Wildcat were still there, waiting for the trouble they both sensed was coming. And they both knew that Falcon wouldn't simply ride away from trouble. Les knelt down and placed his bottle on the edge of the boardwalk, then stepped out into the street. He motioned to Falcon. There it was. The N/N crew exited the saloon, crowding the boardwalk in front of the palace, watching and waiting. They stood in silence, waiting for the hook and draw from the two men who would face each other in the dusty street of the little town. Les walked to the center of the street and stopped, slowly turning to face Falcon's direction. Falcon stepped off the boardwalk and walked slowly toward the center of the street.
It's stupid, Les. No point to it.
I see different, McAllister.
Les and Falcon were half a long block apart. The shopkeepers and business people of the town had to a person stepped outside to stand in silence on the boardwalk, watching the two men walk slowly toward the violent death of at least one of them. Stumpy and Wildcat had moved up the block to stand across from the palace, facing the N/N crew. Falcon and Les each took a few more steps. Jim Wilson and his oldest son stepped out of the general store, each with a rifle in his hands.
We're out of it. Just take it easy. No matter which way it goes, we are out of it. You can put up those rifles.
Stand clear, Jim. The hands won't interfere.
A man stepped out of a hotel to stand on the boardwalk. A stranger. Falcon cut his eyes. He'd never seen the man before. He wondered if it might be the deputy federal marshal. The man was neatly dressed and clean-shaven. He wore one pistol tied down. Then Falcon quickly returned his eyes to the man called Les. The two men were walking steady now, rapidly closing the distance between them. The sun had climbed high into the blue of the sky and it was hot. Falcon stopped about 40 feet from Les. He would walk no further. He would wait for Les to make his play. Falcon shot Les square in the right shoulder, his six gun dropping into the dust from suddenly numbed fingers. Falcon had placed his shot carefully, but with the number of hired guns growing, the days of anyone being selective about killing were almost over. Soon the blood would start to flow indiscriminately. He walked up to Les, who was on his knees in the street, his good hand pressing against the wound in his shoulder.
You satisfied now, Les?
The man looked up at him, the shock wearing off, and his eyes reflecting the pain that was beginning to tear through his body.
I reckon, McAllister, you're the best I ever seen. For a fact, you are.
Some of you boys take him over to the docks. He's hurt, but he'll live.
Wait a minute. Who are them old men with you, McAllister? Them old boys over yonder.
That's Wildcat Willis and Jack Stump, working for John Bailey, along with Big Bob Marsh, Puma Parley, Mustang, and Dan Carson.
Out of the corner of his eyes, Falcon watched a couple of the N/N hands exchange knowing glances. The expressions on their faces stated plainly that they wanted no part of those legendary old mountain men. Falcon figured that come the evening, several of Noonan's men would be riding out, heading for safer locales. But that still left the farmers and small ranchers that were left badly outnumbered.
Well, I got me some money stuck back in my poke. Think I'll mend my shoulder here in town, away from the employ of Nance Noonan.
And just see what happens?
Something like that.
Falcon turned his head. The neatly dressed stranger who had watched the hook and draw from the boardwalk was gone. Falcon walked back to the general store and stepped up onto the boardwalk.
Jim, you folks get your shopping done, get clear of town. We'll hang around till you're finished. A few of those N/N boys will be sure to get liquored up and come trouble hunting after a time. Get enough staples to last you.
and stay out of town for a while. If you have to come to town, several families come together, come armed and ready to use those guns.
The farmer nodded in agreement and walked back into the general store. Stumpy and Wildcat were still across the street, sitting in the shade of the awning, waiting. One of the N/N men had ridden out, probably heading back to Noonan's headquarters to report on what had happened. Two more hands had just plain ridden out, heading in the opposite direction. They were the men Falcon had seen exchange glances. It was one thing to make war against men who were not experienced gun hands. It was quite another matter to be facing some of the meanest men west of the Mississippi. Falcon felt there would be a few more hired guns who'd pull out, but by and large, the exodus was over. The men who stayed would fight until the finish, earning their $40 or $60 a month. The town had settled down, the residents vanishing back into their stores and homes. The long street was silent. But Falcon knew there was tensions and hatreds bubbling just under the surface. When that hate finally reached the boiling point, the range would run red with blood. Knight Rider struck that same night, burning out and killing a farmer who worked the land on several sections south of the Rocky Fork. Falcon rode down to see the family the next day, Big Bob and Puma with him. They found a tired-looking woman loading up a wagon with a few meager possessions she had managed to drag from the flames before the fire consumed everything else they owned. Several children helped the mother. About 100 feet from the still-smoking ashes was a fresh-dug grave.
I work for the Rocking Horse, ma'am. Is there anything I can do to help you?
No. We could have used your help last night, though.
I wish I could have been here. Do you need any money?
We had a few dollars tucked away. That will be enough to get us back to civilization. Damn this country. Damn it to hell.
There was nothing Falcon could say that would ease the woman's pain. He stood silently with hat in hand. Big Bob and Puma stood off to one side, both of them helpless to act in the face of this tragedy. But they would act soon. This senseless killing and burning could not go unavenged.
Then let me buy your land, ma'am. I'll pay top dollar. How many sections did you folks own?
4. You just make me an offer, any offer, and I'll sure take it. How do we handle this sale? I want to get gone from this evil place.
I'll get a piece of paper and pencil, and you write out a bill of sale. And I'll give you a check or cash money. But a better way would be to follow us into town. Let me check you all into the hotel. You can clean up, and I'll treat you to a new set of clothes at the store. We'll see the banker and have the transfer of title done legal, and I'll have funds transferred to any bank of your choice in the nation. How about that?
Let me say goodbye to my husband. Give me a few minutes alone with him, won't you?
You take as much time as you like, ma'am. We'll finish loading up the wagon. That oldest boy of yours needs to have a doctor look at those burns.
Doctors cost money.
Don't worry about that. Now go say your goodbyes.
Big Bob and Puma were angry to the core. It was one thing to fight a grown-up man, but to burn out a family, destroy everything they had worked for, torment women and children, kill the father right in front of the family's eyes, that was a work of cowards. Falcon kept his silence. There was no point in talking. Falcon understood that the mountain men were about to declare war. The wagon was loaded and the team hitched up. The woman wiped her eyes and turned away from the fresh mound of earth.
I'll come back and fix up a marker for your husband, ma'am.
That'd be most kind of you.
Falcon and his friends trailed the wagon and the family over the long, dusty miles into town. They made it just in time, for the bank was only a few minutes away from closing time. Willard almost went into apoplexy when the woman walked in with Falcon, for he knew with some degree of certainty what was about to take place, and he was powerless to do anything except go along with it. Puma took the kids over to the general store to have them outfitted with new clothes, while Big Bob took the boy over to the docks to have his burns attended to. By the time all that was done, Falcon had bought the sections of land, and the woman was picking out a couple of new dresses at the store. Falcon arranged for rooms at the hotel and got the family settled in. Then the three men went over to the cafe for an early supper.